My name is Wayne Kimmel. Thank you to Bradley, Abby, the whole team here, who's done an absolute incredible job of putting on the Maryland Sports Business Conference. And all I could say is, I'm so happy that I could be supportive, that 76 Capital could be helpful in whatever way we can to help all of you make this conference the number one sports conference in the country. And so tonight, before our dessert, Bradley and Abby asked me to do this interview, this fireside chat with my friend Mike Morrison, who is a 1987 alum from the University of Maryland. And just so happy to have you back on campus. Mike is also the vice president of sports betting and fantasy for ESPN, a huge job there. And I'm just really excited to be able to have this conversation. We're going to talk about what all the things that Mike's done in his career, how what he's doing today, what he sees as the next thing in the sports industry, in the sports betting world, maybe in the technology side of the world as well. So let's get this thing started. Mike, so
Great to
happy to
be
have you
here.
back. So what I'd love to do is first sort of share with everybody here, with the students, and most importantly, talk about your background. What was it like being here at, at the University of Maryland? Maybe even before that, where did you grow up? And then
Sure.
tell a little bit about Maryland.
So I was just kind of, by being back here today, I haven't been back here in quite a long time. So I'm reliving a lot of those experiences. And so I think the story is appropriate. I mean, I was a journalism major. I had always been into sports, in the media, as long as I can remember. Frankly, at the time, Maryland had a very good basketball team, and so that was really, high interest of mine, and made the school very appealing. And
Wait, who was on the team back then?
yeah, so who was on the team? I mean, I was here during the Len Bias time, right? So, and of course, none of us knew what was going to happen. And it had a pretty big impact on me personally, and a lot of people that were here at the time. I was actually the general manager of the radio station on campus, WMUC. I did all the play-by-play for the football and the basketball teams during that time, which was on the campus radio station. So we traveled with the teams, called the games. It was during Michael Jordan's time in North Carolina, and was and Len Bias was arguably a better player in some regards than he was, believe it or not. So that was, once in a life. And I was joking with someone earlier. I don't know if you realize this, but in 1985, the Maryland football team was to pick to be number one in the country. I mean, pretty extraordinary when you imagine that happening today. And I think it'd be very difficult to be number one in the country today as a preseason pick, but that actually occurred. On the cover of a leading sport magazine. So there was a lot going on in College Park then. Scott Van Pelt was here. A lot of well-known people were here on campus at that point. And frankly, a lot of people that worked on campus for both the Diamondback and the radio station are scattered throughout the sports industry or the news industry in pretty significant jobs. You may not know all the names. They may not be here as much as you would hope they would be here, but we had quite an amazing group of people at that time, as you do as well today, right? And very memorable, highly impressionable time. And again, it's great coming back and kind of reliving a little bit of that today. I think in terms of career path, and I think when you're at this point in your life, there's a lot you're trying to figure out. And there are some people that probably have the whole thing mapped out. Right? Maybe Bill Gates had it all mapped out. Maybe Mark Zuckerberg had it all mapped out. But it's really hard, right? You've got a lot of information, a lot of things you're trying to figure out. And I think it's really important to kind of embrace the experience of that at that point in time. And again, I'm living case of that because, I got into media, got into sports. We were just talking earlier, no real background or experience in business whatsoever. I would not have walked into the business school had it been here at the time. It was definitely foreign to me. That kind of came later in my career as I developed in roles. And I think it's just important to remember that because a lot of your education will continue after you get out of school. And it's not a race. You'll figure out a lot along the way. And this discovery process is very individual. What you're hoping for here is a great foundation to pursue whatever you want to pursue next.
Well, absolutely. And Mike, when you after you left here at in College Park in 1987, what happened next in your career?
Sure. So I started initially working in radio in the DC area, and I actually started as a traffic reporter when this was still a thing on radio and television. And initially, this was potentially a career path, and did that for a number of years.
Was there always traffic on the Beltway?
Yeah, it was always bad. Still is better. And got to fly in helicopters and look at traffic and all this kind of interesting stuff. Moved into management roles because there was opportunities. It was always interesting to me to be part of what I would say is the problem solving group, which is often the management team. And so, moved into roles where I was in leadership, with that company, and moved around the country to a lot of different locations. And then early in my career, I happened to join Bloomberg at the time, which was an emerging company in New York. And Mike Bloomberg wanted to build out media. So I was the third person he hired in the media division of the company. And that was about building out Bloomberg's brand, the business, just the proliferation of business commentary, which again, in the early, the mid 90s, it wasn't that problem. Right, you still had newspapers that people were reading, looking at stock quotes from yesterday. The real-time information flow was not, there was no I sound like my father or grandfather. There was no internet, right? There was no internet. Extraordinary. There were no mobile phones for that matter. Mike Bloomberg used to give a talk about how the future of media was going to be a shiftable newsprint, and like a liquid form of a newspaper that you could touch and it would adapt to whatever your interests were. He probably wasn't entirely wrong. And he used to hold the phone out, I think big phone at the time, and said, "This is the future of media." I think he got that one right. So that was an amazing immersion working for a visionary leader. And in many ways, that was my MBA. I mean, I was immersed in a world of business and equities, and futures and everything that I hadn't experienced, early on in my career or in school. And I was very fortunate for that experience. And I kind of leveraged my passion for media, my knowledge for media, working on distributing Bloomberg content around the US and working with newsrooms to expand their capabilities around business reporting, which again was a new thing. And because I always wanted to travel and live internationally, there was an opportunity to go work in London for Bloomberg and do the same thing across Europe and Asia. And I pursued that vigorously and ended up living outside the US for about 18 years as a result of that. I'm gonna keep going here.
I'll keep going. No.
It's along the way, I ended up moving on from Bloomberg and joining a sports entity that was later acquired by ESPN. And I've been with ESPN now for 16 years. So I think it's a lot of people have these stories. You don't have this necessarily mapped out. But if I think about the career, I've had amazing experiences. I've lived all over the world. I've experienced, sports in many different markets around the world. There's nothing like seeing a cricket match in India. And a World Cup in cricket in India. There's nothing like seeing a football or soccer match in London, in the Premier League. Having the ability to have these types of experiences globally gives you an appreciation for the US and also a perspective on global sports. We launched ESPN in China about 7 or 8 years ago when the NBA really blew up in China, which at the time we thought was the biggest thing to happen and a big part of the future, and then a lot changed. And so, you know, you do see, as you look at the world around, how big sports is everywhere. It's not just in the US, how much it means to people. And again, I've been fortunate to have these experiences in a lot of amazing places.
So, you know, there's so many different areas that we can go. And I want to ask you so many questions about that. I mean, you know, you talk about, I mean, the globalization of sports. I mean, a lot of people are talking about it today, about how, you know, impactful sports is to the world, right? And how sports can change the world. People, you know, that, and it's like using that Nelson Mandela quote about how sports truly can change the world and bring people together, right? You've seen this on a global scale. Where do you think, you know, we believe certainly at 76 Capital, you believe at ESPN that, you know, the sports is on this unbelievable trajectory today. Things are really moving quickly in the world of sports. Where do you think things are going to go in the next couple of years?
Yeah, I think it's important to sort of think back to what just happened, right? So if you look at COVID, if you can imagine in the span of, let's March 2020, in arguably 4 or 5 days, the entire sports world was shut down. And it was unfathomable to think about at the time, right? You know, again,
what do you watch on TV?
I remember having these conversations. I remember having Rudy Gobert, who I forget who he played for at the time, right? Touching a bunch of phones in a press conference. And the next day, the NBA was shut down. And then it was like, you know, the MLB, I mean, and it was like, oh, well, they're not going to cancel that. And then the next thing you know, the tournament's canceled. A year, Maryland had a chance to do extremely well. A lot of things happened, and in all of us that were living it were saying, this is not possible, right? And I think it was a real interesting point for the sports industry in general. And I think, you know, there's a lot of pride in what we took in figuring out, okay, what do we do now, right? You know, what can we actually talk about? What can we actually cover? What's going to be interesting to people? And so I think in that moment, it was an opportunity for sports in general to do a reset, figure out, you know, are people going to come back to games? Are people going to watch on television? How can we reform leagues and, you know, action that is going to be compelling? A lot happened. And the good news is, if you look at it today, sports have never been more popular, more dynamic. The level of, you know, interest, play, value in women's sports is skyrocketing like it never has. You know, almost as many people watch the women's final this year as watch the men's final in the NCAA tournament, right? This is going to keep going. Sorry that Angel Reese left Maryland, but she certainly blew up after she left Maryland and probably made the right decision in terms of her brand and opportunity, right? But it's a great story, right? You know, everyone in the country knows who Caitlin Clark is. Amazing. So I think we're in an incredible, you know, point in sports in terms of, and we had to kind of get our way through COVID to remind ourselves how valuable, how interesting, how much we needed that, which I think was a really incredible point. And so I'm really bullish on the future of sports, the future of big events, not just for our business, but as a fan, as a consumer. And this is an incredible time to be in sports, and the growth of the business. You know, another story, the other day, Washington, you know, football team, the Commanders sold for, I think, was it $6.5 billion?
$6 billion.
That's a half billion.
Right. I remember in 1981 when the Baltimore Orioles team was bought for $13 million. And I was joking, you know, your business colleagues before, I even with the rate of inflation, I don't think 13 million is equivalent to 6 billion today. Right. So just imagine how much things have grown in terms of value of teams, franchise, value of sports. This is an incredible time for the sports industry. These are very, very large businesses, whether you're a university athletic director or a CEO of a team or running a multimedia sports company. These are massive jobs, substantial opportunities, and you know, all we see ahead is a lot of growth here.
So, you know, you are, you know, the head of sports betting at ESPN. You talk about all this change, all this opportunity that's now out there. You have these companies like DraftKings and FanDuel and Caesars and MGM and Fanatics in the game and Better, my God, Better yesterday signing the two, you know, female basketball players from University of Miami. They don't do their fourth, fifth year. They go off to, you know, do a deal with Better, right? I mean, it's just unbelievable to see what's happening with the world of sports betting. So talk a little bit about, from your perspective, how sports betting has impacted how regulated and legal sports betting has impacted the world of sports. Because, and it's only been, you know, 5 years now. People have been betting on sports forever, but now it's mainstream. It's part of the overall culture today.
I mean, listen, I think the thing about sports betting is it's always been around, right? So even though there's been moments, at least in U.S. history, where there were some major issues that cropped up as a result of sports betting, and I think what happened is U.S. leagues really shut things down for a very long time because of the fear attached to that. Part of what I saw, again, working internationally, is in legal betting markets, mature betting markets, no one really thinks that much about it. It's just part of the consumption of sports. It's part of the expense around the sports experience. It's very normalized and very much part of the culture around sports. And part of why, you know, I gravitated towards a role here in the U.S. was that exposure I had internationally and that experience. I think what it means from a business standpoint, a fan experience standpoint, a sports industry standpoint, they're all somewhat related but different, right? So starting, you know, first with the industry, this would not be happening if the sports industry wasn't in favor of it and supportive of it, right? The Adam Silver, commissioner of the NBA, wrote an op-ed piece in the New York Times back in 2018 and really advocated for sports betting as important as sports. Again, NBA is a global league. Adam saw this around the world. And I think was willing to go out there and take a risk and say, this is something that needs to happen. When, you know, the Supreme Court repealed PASPA in 2018, we're at the 5-year anniversary, you know, this month, it wasn't expected, right? There was a lot of questions about what would happen, but it really happened faster than a lot of people thought. From a business standpoint, I think when things happen quickly, you've got to be prepared to move. We'd already laid out some strategy and thinking about what this would mean for ESPN. And you know, what we focused first on was content, because in the end of the day, sports is about who won and who lost and by how much and how much you expected that to be before the game started, which is the essence of sports betting. It's about data. It's about predictive data. It's about analyzing what happened and what should happen next. And for most people, it's about betting a little bit of money, maybe you win, maybe you don't, but you want to engage and participate more and be part of the action. And so that leads to engagement, higher ratings, greater interest in sports. It's not accidental that we're in an upward trajectory in terms of engagement right now. Sports betting definitely has something to do with that. You know, so again, I think this is generally good about re-energizing sports and the entertainment aspect around sports. It's a very regulated industry, right? You know, it is something that is each state has to regulate, has to legalize. There's tremendous scrutiny on everything that's done. There's significant requirements from financial disclosure to licensing to all the leaders in the business. This is about as regulated an industry as you might imagine. And the value of the licenses and the value of keeping things working is, you know, is incredibly high. So we feel really good about this type of industry in terms of how it's being run. And we're really just in the first innings of what this means for sports.
So, at ESPN, right? The worldwide leader in sports. I mean, everyone looks up to what ESPN does. Take us maybe behind the scenes a little bit of those days when now sports betting is legal. You can now talk about it. Should we talk about it on TV? Should we not talk about it? Should the commentators talk about it? Like, was there a time when you're sitting with the other executives, like, should we be talking about the lines? Should we not be talking about the lines? Like, how did you decide what to do? I mean, you and now it's running on the ticker below. It's all over the place. I mean, no, at some point, most people thought that was never really going to happen, but you guys led that. And how did that all come about?
I mean, I think, again, you have to start, and we looked at this, you have to be credible, you have to be relevant, and you have to make an entertainment. So, number one, it doesn't make sense to have commentators, reporters, talent that doesn't understand betting, talking about it kind of an offhanded, manner. I mean, just like I'm sure all of you have this experience. When you're watching any sport, you're expecting high level of expertise, great commentary, whether it's in writing or being voiced, it's incredibly important. And there's nothing worse than someone trying to dumb something down or talking to you like you don't really understand it, or they're not credible themselves. So you have to really figure out who's the right talent, who are the right people to talk about this. And I would say that's still a process, because this is an area of the industry that's still fairly shallow in terms of depth of talent. It's frankly not a very diverse part of the sports industry right now. It needs to become much more inclusive, much more diverse, much more widely available than it is currently. So I think we're starting, we started to figure out a few years ago, and we're still on this journey about the best talent, the best capability, the right level of expertise. That's very important. At the same time, you want to make it accessible and appealing to the audience. You have to. If you get too bogged down in jargon, or you're speaking past people, it's not going to make any sense. You have to make it relatable, make it entertaining. And I think incorporating it into the coverage is, again, as I said before, it's about, what do we think is going to happen today? What's expected? Who's the favorite? What's the expectation on the score?
Well, what about, I know I've certainly noticed that Scott Van Pelt, our fellow, Maryland alum here, right? He and Stanford Steve and what they now do on their show down here, right? It's a much bigger part of the show than it ever was.
Sure.
Was that a something that from the you guys from the top down, or was something that they were like, hey, well, this is the time for us to lean into this? How did that happen?
Again, I think it's a process, right? I think we take a lot of pride in being able to get things right, get comfort level with shows, talent, producers. What we did initially with some of our partnerships in the industry was to really unify everything around a couple of brands or providers, because every individual producer might want to reference odds, might want to reference their favorite sports book. Maybe it wasn't a legal sports book, maybe it was an offshore sports book. So we had to really clean that up and say, look, we're going to unify our sourcing to one provider. It's been Caesars Sportsbook for a while. And that was really important to do that. And also to do a lot of education. And take something like Scott's beat, Bad Beat segment, which was a funny segment, which, by the way, he would do a number of things. Like, he would talk about parlays without saying there were parlays, right? He would say, well, if you picked a bunch of these things, and they all happen, you're going to win a lot of money. I mean, that's right. That's the story. So, and he did that really effectively. And again, I think we're more open about that today than we might have been a few years ago. But again, trying to make sure we're keeping it entertaining, keeping it relatable, keeping it authentic within that particular, talent's capability or comfort level. I think that's incredibly important. And I think we're still on this journey. I mean, we want to make sure we're at pace with the market and not ahead of it necessarily. This is still a state-by-state legal rollout. California, Florida, Texas are not legal yet. That's almost a third of the U.S. adult population. It's a lot. So again, as I said before, this is still a developing area for the business. And I think we've tried to make sure we're measured about our response and what we do. Now, you're probably seeing a lot more promotion and advertising around sports betting. You know, as a state comes online like Maryland did recently, there's a big push to create awareness, to create activity. And that's obviously going to continue. And sports media is going to be a beneficiary of that, as our teams, you know, as our people that are monetizing around sports betting.
Well, I know there's, I have a lot more questions and a lot of other things that I want to talk about sports betting with you in front of everybody and privately, but anyway, the point is that this show is for the students, and for all of you. So I'm going to ask Mike one more question. Hopefully it's something to help all of, see how he can help all of you, but also at the same time, we'd love to take a couple questions from the audience here. So Mike, just real quick, I mean, what are there a couple things that you can recommend to the students here? What are some of the things they could do to someday potentially work at a place like ESPN?
Well, I think in terms of the sports industry, as we talked about the numbers before and the growth of it, arguably there's never been a better time to think about the sports industry. There's so many jobs. There is such a requirement at the team level, league level, a licensing level, merchandise level, the media, you know, companies to find great people that have a passion for sports and want to help figure out, problem solve for what's next. Every single technology company, by the way, has someone who's in charge of sports, whether that's Sony or IBM. You know, again, something that may not be obvious. Everyone is trying to figure out how to be in the sports space, right? You know, whether you're an investment bank or a technology company or sports media company, you have a large concern or interesting concern around sports. So that's great news, because there's a lot of jobs and a lot of opportunities. If this is an area or anything you want to enter into, I certainly would advocate areas like sports betting as a new growth industry. And I'm not saying that as someone who leads what we're currently doing, but just if you think about it, there are points in time when there are growth curves and opportunities around a certain space. And it's very important just to recognize that, right? You know, there's already been $100 billion last year bet, right? And that's just, you know, money that's being bet. And that's, you know, the first full year, you know, post pandemic, a lot of states having legal sports betting and a lot of growth in the industries. You know, the total addressable market is several hundred billion, you know, at maturity. There's not many new industries like that. So that just, that's going to demand, you know, virtually every type of individual and capability you can imagine. And, you know, a lot of the initial companies that started in this space got there very quickly, were opportunistic. You know, people that were there got big jobs. People that worked in the, you know, a lot of great people in the casino industry moved over to sports betting. But I'm seeing a lot of people in the industry, there's just a wide need across the board. You know, there's someone in every league who's was in a business development job and they're now in charge of sports betting. There's someone in every media company doing the same thing. There's someone in every team who's now, like Camden Yards, just licensed a deal with the sports book in Camden Yards. Every team will have someone in that role. So again, I just say that to, you know, make sure there's awareness there, because it certainly is an area of opportunity. And there may not be as many journalism jobs today in sports as there used to be, but there's certainly going to be a lot of opportunities in sports betting.
That's awesome. That's really encouraging, hopefully, for all of you, because there really are. I mean, all the companies that we've invested in the world of sports, everyone's looking for really talented, smart people to be part of their businesses. So, are there any questions that we have for Mike? Don't be shy. Here you go. Sure. Yeah. Well,
need like an
amplification. I'll go like this. There you go. So, my name is Adam Cole. I'm a business major, and I previously interned at Washington and Kennedy, worked at one of the music people as a marketing intern. So, I sort of wanted to get your idea on how how the rise of technology is going to intersect and integrate and support betting. And then also, the second question, you were talking about bringing diversity into the sports betting space. Like, what strategies do you have right now for that?
So in terms of innovation across the board, the challenge in sports betting to date has been very focused on getting launched, licensing, regulatory, and a lot of times Silicon Valley doesn't like heavily regulated industries because it really suppresses innovation. So there's a big opportunity for innovation. At some point, there's going to be a need to really differentiate these services, right? I mean, if you think about it, take the food delivery service, right? There's all these different brands and names. You basically just want to get your food delivered, and what's your favorite app? You know, that's not going to work in sports betting. There's going to have to be differentiation. There's going to be, areas that in companies that win and ones that lose. There's going to be a lot of consolidation in the industry. And we're starting to see the shift into more and more innovation. I mean, something that sounds really basic, but, same game parlays or parlay betting in general is a much more profitable opportunity for sports books than straight money line bets, like winning, who's winning and who's losing by how much. Because the likelihood of winning of a parlay for an individual is much higher, the odds are much lower, right? So what sports books are trying to do is, how do we create entertaining stories that engage people that you participate in, but we don't want to necessarily see everybody win every time, right? Because part of the opportunity is to create engagement, but make sure that the profitability against which you're developing is effective. So a long way of saying that there's a lot of gamification around sports betting that's going to develop in a significant way. We have a very large, fantasy market in the U.S., fantasy sports market, in large part because betting didn't exist. That fantasy sports market doesn't really exist in much of the world, but they want people bet. So in terms of diversity, I think this is something we're really working through. I mean, number one, if you think about just front of the camera talent, right? We have to make sure that we're reflecting the audience we serve. And, how do you find great talent across every area of the business? I think, unfortunately, in something like sports betting, there's not a lot of people that are doing it right. Not a lot of, talent that's developing a profile, developing expertise, I think intimidates a lot of people. As I said before, no one wants to come across as someone who's not smart or not effective. So this is an area of opportunity. Just like, several years ago, I think there was an opportunity to become a sideline reporter because every single sport or, entity needed to have someone on the field talking to coaches, right? Again, it sounds really obvious, but that was like a thing for a while, right? So I think it's the same thing with sports betting, is there are going to be so many jobs in so many areas of need. And, hopefully we see a wide range of individuals go for it then. I think, the industry, with leadership talent, behind the scenes, engineering, product development, again, it's a fairly homogenous industry, unfortunately. So we have to say to ourselves, why that happened, right? Is there a lack of awareness? Do we as leaders in the industry need to develop opportunities to create diverse talent, create work streams? And we're looking at all that right now. And I think it's very important that we get this right. Another question? I want to just shout it out. Okay.
My name is Sam Benning. I'm a freshman here at the business school. You talked a little bit on this earlier, Mike. There are some dangers in sports betting too that people talk about, like some of the negative side. I'm not like that or anything, but were there talks at ESPN or like stuff like that where you guys had to work around the challenge with people thinking about like the negatives of like addiction and stuff like that? How do you work around that? How do you strategize about that?
So there's a couple of things. I mean, there's big initiatives around responsible gaming. And number one, you're starting to see more messaging around that, and we will be an active participant in this. And all the leagues will be as well. And I think that's an important part of it. I think at the same time, what really drives sports betting, I mean, there are certainly serious bettors that think of this as they bet for a living. but they always have. And whether it's legal or illegal, it hasn't really changed before, right? But for most people, it's really about, you know, social capital, you know, talking to their friends, you know, communicating about what they're betting. I find myself sometimes, you know, I'll bet $5 and I get really excited at a $5 bet, right? It's you know, it's more about the fact that I'm playing this and I'm engaging and I'm like, oh, I hope I'll win at this, right? But it's not, you know, it's not something that's addictive. It's not something that, you know, there's a dependency attached to. There will be stories and things that emerge that we're going to have to manage, but I think that's like with everything. It would be a mistake not to innovate here. And we're going to have to address things and see how they develop. I think from a marketing standpoint, we're going to need to be careful about not turning this into, I don't know, for lack of a better reference, to NASCAR, where there's too many stickers on the car and too much promotion. I think that will need to be streamlined. And I think that's what we've seen in other markets around the world. When it becomes every shirt, every stadium, every sign, every message has betting attached to it, it's too much. And you get significant pushback. Sure.
Talking about the same time, I guess back to the time we're sitting here in college. What's one thing that you wish you knew?
One thing I wish we knew.
You wish you knew.
One thing that we wish we knew. Okay. You want to go first?
You go first.
You know, the one I would say the one thing that I personally wish that I knew was that I wish that I would have gone out and met more people and developed more relationships. Some of my best friends in the world are my fraternity brothers, friends that I made here at Maryland. But I feel like there's so many more people that were here, that are here on this campus, that I wish I could have met, said hello to, learned about what they're into. So for me, that's a really big thing. And I think that that's one of the beauties that this campus really has, is that every day you will walk by somebody on this campus that you've never seen before. Even after being here 4 years, right, Brad? I mean, you're literally walking by somebody that you've never seen, and you could actually maybe become their best friend, or maybe they become, you know, someone that you end up doing business with in the future. Who knows? But I think and one of the reasons I say that, and this wasn't the one thing, but the one reason I really say that is I think Mike and I and many of us who went here are so proud of being Maryland alums and being so proud of being Terps. And we want this place, we want all Maryland people to be the best. As I said to someone earlier today, anyone who ever says to me, I went to HBS, I always say, I'm not sure what you're talking about. What does that stand for? No, and that's Harvard Business School. But it's like, I always purposely say that. I'm like, oh, I don't know what you're talking about. Anyway.
You know, I think it's really important to pay attention to what are your passions? What are you interested in? They're there for a reason. So again, there's a lot of things we do in life to sort of say, well, I should be doing this, or maybe this is an area for me to make a lot of money, so I'm going to go do this. I think it's really important to listen to things that drive you. I think those, they're never going to go away. They will be with you your entire life. And so I think it's important to just, you know, listen to that voice, hear it, because it's happening for a reason, and it probably will drive a lot more opportunity for you than trying to talk yourself into something else. I think that's a really important point.
Any other questions? Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm just inspired in the meeting here. I've seen a lot about emergence of all of these sports, kind of like less mainstream that are in the media. And I want to know what the team against Ben in general has been thinking about for like the sports betting world and fantasy and kind of making it more mainstream and spending a lot more property.
The questions all around all the emerging sports across the world today.
I mean, I think that pickleball, right, is the fastest growing sport. I mean, things change quickly. So I think a couple of things. We're always looking to bring in new sports and what's the right platform? And, you know, is that a digital only experience? Is that, you know, something that should be a premium offer or something that's available for free? I think all of that's part of it. You know, I think that going back to what I said before, I think women's sports is such a large issue and opportunity. We're not there yet. And I think we're spending a lot of time there right now trying to figure out how to develop in that space and to, you know, see more prominent coverage of women's sports. So I think that's, again, seems like an obvious area, but it's really, if you look at the industry, it's amazing this last tournament. I mean, we had 22 million brackets filled out for March Madness, right? In 6 days. But 20 of them were the men's tournament, a couple million for women's tournament. That's imbalanced, right? Although this was a record year for the women's bracket. So something needs to happen here and there need to be changes. So I think this is a big area of focus. I think with esports, you know, it's interesting because I think we looked at that off and on, and during COVID, it became kind of, you know, the only thing, right? And there was a lot of coverage there. It's not my personal area of expertise. I've been to a lot of events. I've been to a lot in China. They're massive. They're incredible. They're every bit a sporting event that you could possibly imagine. I think there's still a big opportunity, whether it's us or someone else in the sports industry, to ultimately figure that out. It's competition. It's incredibly exceptional skill. When you see 12-year-old kids with their mobile phones playing at light speed and gaming, it's unbelievable, right? There's a lot there. A lot of athletes play video games and compete aggressively in their spare time, right? You know, all ages, you know, all demographics. I think this is ultimately a space that will develop. I'm surprised it hasn't been fully figured out yet. So that's my pitch for someone needs to figure out esports.
Why don't we take one more? One more question out there. Any other questions? Well, with that, well, listen, Mike, I just really appreciate you coming back to College Park, coming out tonight. This has been an incredible night. Again, congrats to the whole Maryland sports business conference team has put this together. Congrats on the fact that there's going to be a sports management program here. It's amazing. It's amazing how things are moving forward. And I hope that over the next several years, that all of us come back together and continue to try to make this the sports business conference in the country, bar none, the number one. So go Terps, and really excited for tomorrow. Thanks.